Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
Excited to be joined by Joe DeLeon, who's a producer for Yahoo Sports College Football and a college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Network. Joe, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, of course. Things are getting, of course, very heated, and everything is starting to really pick up some steam here with the NFL draft. And I am just so excited. And I hope this, the night is going to be as eventful as it's starting to pan out to be right now with everything that's being discussed.
Man, I know it is getting so excited. We are in the thick of draft season. We've got all these mock drafts, rankings. Everyone's got their opinions on all these players. It's really just such a fun time of the year. And I know you do a ton of coverage, especially with Believe Network. I've seen a lot of great stuff that you've been putting out recently. We're excited to get your thoughts here, Joe, on some of these prospects and in different position groups. And I want to start with that, Joe, because this draft is really considered deep at quarterback. We know wide receiver is another really deep position. And of course, offensive tackle with so many guys being projected to go in that first round. But what position group or position groups for that matter, do you think just aren't getting talked about enough in this class?
Yeah, I feel like right now there hasn't been really a ton of love for the defensive tackle class, which is really confusing to me. And I think the reason why that's happening is because outside of Jerjon Newton, who's not necessarily a guarantee to go in the first round, everyone just assumes that it's a mediocre group because there's only one guy worthy of going in the first round, and it's the complete opposite. It is an incredibly deep class where we could see 10 to 15 guys, potentially, probably more closer to 10, go within the first four rounds. There's just so much potential. There's so many different body types, so many different players that can fit different roles for different defensive schemes. I think that maybe more than any other position group, we have the possibility for guys to go from rounds 2 to 5 that end up being impactful, high-quality starters. And also part of this comes into play because the defensive tackle position has just slowly regressed in roster-building value. It's just a position that has not been as important. If you just think of naturally, teams are throwing the ball a lot more. It's far more important to have good pass rushers. A lot of times the best athletes along the defensive lines are transitioning to pass rusher. Darius Robinson from Missouri is a perfect example of that, who was playing more in the interior and then eventually plays on the outside and ends up being a fantastic edge rusher for Missouri this past year. But if I look at this defensive tackle class, I love guys like McKinley Jackson, who's got a really quick first step out of Texas A&M. I'm really enamored by Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State, who is low to the ground, very, very explosive in short areas, and is a really good pass rusher. If I look a little further down, I'm enamored by Gabe Hall from Baylor, who dominated the Senior Bowl. There's just so much potential in this class for the defensive tackles to end up being one position group that we're talking about 3 years from now, where it's like, oh my God, all of these guys are major important players for their teams.
To stay kind of along with that line of thinking in terms of like there's not a lot of defensive interior linemen, I want to talk about the running backs. You know, since it's like a depressed commodity that's become this thing that's happening over the past few years in the NFL, especially in the draft, like there's always talk about no running backs in the first round. But again, now we're looking at there are some running backs. Like, where do you expect in the draft to start where you might begin to see an actual run in terms of rounds on running backs?
Yeah, I think that, and it's understandable why there is this notion that running backs are slowly, one, becoming less and less important of being worthy to be taken in the first round, and there's also less talent worthy of being selected that high. I just think it's really cyclical, and I think it's more cyclical than it's ever been, because next year's running back class has a lot of guys. I mean, there's a potential for us to see two or three, probably more realistically two, go in the first round. There's guys like Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State, Travion Henderson from Ohio State, Quinshon Judkins, his teammate at Ohio State, and then Donovan Edwards from Michigan. There's just so many important names. And I also think with players like Travion Henderson and Donovan Edwards returning to school to go back to their programs this year and not declaring for the draft kind of took the air out of this year's running back group. I will say it is pretty uneventful and unexciting this year's running back class. I think there's potential for like a couple of guys to be full-time starters, but it's mostly going to be rotational players. The ones that stand out to me the most, Trey Benson from Florida State, somebody that I love, who's my number one running back right now. He kind of gives me vibes of Leonard Fournette, the way that he's built, the way that he has tremendous vision. He's physical, but he's also explosive, and he tested really, really well. I also really like Jalen Wright from Tennessee, who had barely any touches last year because he was splitting time, but still managed to rush for 1,000 yards. He's a great receiver. But outside of that, guys like Bucky Irving and Blake Corum and Audric Estime and Jonathan Brooks, I think are going to be a little bit more rotational as we see a lot of these teams. Kind of like, I think the perfect example is the Kansas City Chiefs. Albeit Isaiah Pacheco was important for their success, he wasn't the sole guy that they were handing the ball off to. They were rotating multiple players in and out of that running back spot. So I think a lot of teams are now trying to transition to that angle instead of investing long-term money and long-term early draft capital in running backs.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. And it does make sense. Like you said, we've just seen a shift in the way football is being played. It's so quarterback-centric. Wide receivers have become elevated. Unfortunately, running backs aren't as viewed as valuable. And kind of like you touched on there with the D-tackle group, it just isn't as important. But nonetheless, excited to kind of see where these guys go because we know they can still have an impact in the game. Now, every April, it seems like there's always a few guys that get drafted in the first round that most analysts weren't expecting to go that high. Who do you think could be a surprise first round pick this year? Maybe a guy or two that you're looking at that can maybe sneak into that first round group.
Yeah, I think that realistically, some of those guys that fit that description, I think the first one being, and this is less of a surprise because there's been a lot of a heavy push for this one guy in particular, Graham Barton from Duke. He's not somebody that I have as a projected first rounder. I think he's a fine player on day two and could turn out to be just a nice average starter in the NFL. But as we know, NFL teams get excited over guys that they think are high floor players. Certain teams build and draft that way. So Graham Barton from Duke is probably one of the first ones that come to mind. I also would go as far as to say I think that there is a potential for Xavier Worthy, the Texas wide receiver who broke the 40-yard dash record at the NFL Combine this year. I think that that's probably going to be the biggest surprise because most people, it feels like, are in the camp that Xavier Worthy is not well-rounded enough. His hands are too inconsistent. His frame is too light. He's not impactful after the catch particularly, in the sense that if he goes down on first contact, he's very shifty and explosive, but he's somebody who can't really break tackles because of how light he is. But I could totally see a team maybe even trade back in to the end of the first round and him to get selected in that 25 to 32 range just because a team sees the elite speed and they want to capitalize on it. I mean, we remember John Ross was considered to be a mid to late first rounder. He breaks the 40-yard dash time, and then he's, I think it was a 9th overall pick with the Bengals. So just because he has the speed, there are so many general managers that are easily baited into trying to say, we can unlock something with this guy. And I think Xavier Worthy is the perfect example of that.
Hey, listen, Joe, I am a longtime Raiders fan, and when you say speed, we get nervous over here. But I completely understand the sentiment. In terms of the draft, we've noticed that there's obviously a lot of upperclassmen. We've seen a lot of starts overall with a lot of the players that are coming out. With this draft, what players and or position groups do you think benefited the most from staying in school longer? Obviously, they've had the COVID year. Some had a redshirt year. So we're seeing a lot of maybe perhaps 4, 5, and 6 year guys that are coming out now.
Yeah, I think the easiest answer for that is quarterbacks. And I think most would assume that would be the case, that quarterback's a position that requires a lot of experience, that requires a lot of reps underneath your belt. And I remember Phil Sims, his show that he does on Believe with his son Matt Sims, they talk about this a lot, where guys that have played a high number of snaps and have a lot of throws underneath their belt, they tend to step into the NFL more quickly. If they've got the traits to support it, they're going to be able to step in and play at a high level early. It's the reason why guys like Justin Herbert and CJ Stroud are able to hit the ground running, because they've played so much. I think that this year especially, we look at these upperclassmen guys like Michael Penix and Bo Nix, who in the summer didn't really have any range or capability to be a first rounder. They were mostly day two projections. But the way that they were able to take a step forward with all of the snaps that they've seen, I think that there's a good chance that at least one of them goes in the first round. But then we can go to a guy like Jaden Daniels as a perfect example, who has seen so many different scenarios, has played for two different teams, has just slowly gotten better and better. If he declared last year, which there was a possibility that he was going to, I really thought that he was going to declare, he would have been an early day three pick, maybe a late day two, because there was more that he needed to prove as a downfield passer. And he was able to attack the middle of the field more aggressively and more consistently. His accuracy got even better. He's a really good example. And I'd even couple in there, Drake May is somebody who fits that description in a way, not because of the eligibility and how long you played, but he had to throw the ball a million times at North Carolina. And because of what he was thrown into, he feels much more natural at the position than somebody like JJ McCarthy. So I think that with all these guys, it's easy to pinpoint if you've got a ton of reps underneath your belt, if you've played a lot of snaps, you've played a lot of seasons, and I think it's going to be a continual trend until the COVID eligibility is done with, which should be, I believe, in the next couple of years. Quarterbacks that have played a lot of seasons, I think, are going to be more coveted than guys that are younger and a little bit more raw.
Yeah, it's such a great point. You mentioned some guys recently, like you said, with Justin Herbert and CJ Stroud. I immediately thought of Brock Purdy, you know, another guy that, you know, played 4 years, got really overlooked in the draft, and then came in and people realized right away, like, whoa, maybe we kind of overlooked all the experience he had as a 4-year starter at at Iowa State, and just being able to hit the ground running, picking up an offense quickly. I think that stuff really matters, and it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's a big reason why guys like Penix and Bo Nix are kind of being viewed as more NFL ready than a lot of quarterbacks we've seen in recent years. So I think that's such a valid point, especially with the quarterback position being such a above the shoulders position. Now, what I didn't mention earlier in your intro is that you're also an FCS football top 25 voter. So, who are some small school NFL draft prospects that we all need to know about?
There's two that stand out to me the most. And then there's a couple other guys that I think are going to get drafted somewhere on day three. But the biggest guy that I keep pounding the table for is Jalix Hunt from Houston Christian. He's a former defensive back at Cornell, transfers to Houston Christian. He adds a ton of weight. There's reps of him playing corner, him playing safety, and then he turns into an edge rusher. He is so raw, and you can see on film that, like, he really doesn't know what he's totally doing half the time. But despite that, the bend, the burst, the close down speed, the way that he's able to win reps despite not really having any hand technique is just astounding for me. I have him in my top 10 edge prospects. I think if there's somebody in the middle of day three that gets picked in a couple of years, we're talking about as a really productive pass rusher, it could be Jalix Hunt. I think that he could turn into a really important situational rusher at the very least if he gets some good coaching with the defensive coordinator that's aggressive and that's wanting to work with a good athlete. I really like Isaiah Davis. I've been a fan of him from South Dakota State. He has the one red flag that we don't love with running backs, which is injuries and a ton of hits, a ton of snaps on his frame. But he is physical. He is somebody who could be just a really quick flash in the pan, kind of like Isaiah Robinson from, or no, not Isaiah Robinson. Who is the I'm totally blanking here. The Jaguars running back that came from Illinois State a couple of years ago. Do you guys know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, he ended up going to the Jets because he hurt his knee. He was a late round undrafted free agent. Totally forgot, but I'm completely aware of who you're talking
about. Yeah, but so he's a good example of somebody who could just jump into a situation because he's taken a lot of carries, he's got good vision, and he could be impactful in his first 2 years and then just completely disappear because he can't stay healthy, something along those lines. But his two teammates, Garrett Greenfield and Mason McCormick, tested tremendously well at the NFL Combine. So I think that those are two offensive linemen that are also should be on the radar. I think that could get drafted early. And the last one, Christian Boyd from UNI has been a riser. I was surprised he didn't get the Combine invite. He should have been at the Senior Bowl. Very physical, well-put-together kid who should go somewhere on day three and I think is going to be just a nice rotational piece along the defensive line for whatever team that picks him.
And just for our audience, we were speaking about James Robinson.
James Robinson. Damn it. Okay. All right. That's who it is.
It clicked as soon as you said it, because I remember him on the Jets and then kind of tailing off because he hurt his knee. So, you know, this draft is kind of like the first, how I'm looking at it, this is the first iteration of the NIL player. And there's been a lot of talk specifically surrounding Marvin Harrison Jr. And though he is the first that's kind of not – I guess he did only the interviews at the Combine. He didn't work out at the Combine. He didn't do anything, not even run the 40 or anything at the pro day. And basically from what I understand and what I saw from he and his father, kind of everything's on tape that you need to see. Moving forward, as we're now in this NIL era, do you anticipate seeing anything – no, not just from, you know, what we saw from Marvin Harrison, but any new hurdles that, you know, scouts, teams may have to look out for, because now this is all, you know, untapped territory. We don't know what's happening as these players now come into the league, already being to a certain extent millionaires. And obviously this is more on the top end than some of the later round picks, but a lot of these kids are coming in already millionaires and paid. So I wonder, like, what the thought process is from teams and scouts and what we're seeing and what we can project out for the future.
Yeah, I think that the best takeaway from the modern college football era that we're in that could generate a red flag like you're talking about is how often guys move from school to school. Because that to me is the easiest indicator without rumors or just scuttlebutt getting in the way. Because that happens all the time. I mean, it happened with Quinshon Judkins. It's going to happen with just tons of these guys every year when they transfer because fan bases are upset and they're disenfranchised. So certain things are going to get blown out of proportion. But a great example is Bear Alexander, who is the biggest extreme, who just entered the portal from USC today. And he transferred every single year in high school. And then now is about to be on his third school in college before he enters the NFL draft. And I actually had a parent of another athlete who played with him at one of the schools who was like, yeah, this doesn't really surprise us. He, you know, he's me first person and he clearly just, you know, he can't stay in one place. Not speaking to the individual wasn't really speaking too negatively on them, but they just had mentioned that their son had played with him. I think that somebody like him is a good example of if a player is moving around a lot, it usually means that they lack maybe the maturity and the ability to withstand adversity. And the last thing that an NFL team wants is to deal with a guy who's not mature enough to deal with difficult circumstances, somebody who's going to demand a trade or demand to be cut. You don't want to have to deal with an Antonio Brown, which is obviously an extreme. But I think that that is realistically the biggest issue that's going to come out of this, because there's so many more success stories of kids who NIL has helped them mature and understand how to be young businessmen and know how to be, you know, manage their finances. I think it is more of an early exposure to that. And there's far more education that is being required by these schools than the NFL necessarily requires. And I think it's going to only get more and more strict. So that for me, probably the transfer portal stuff's the biggest red flag.
Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pintglass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. So this is going to be a two-part question here. Which prospects do you think are being slept on? Or is there a guy that you think is really being slept on by most analysts? And then maybe on the opposite end, who is a guy that you think is getting a little too much hype during this pre-draft process as well?
I always love answering these questions. So my guy that I keep pounding the table for is Jalen Polk, the wide receiver from Washington. He, to me, has been underserved and underrecognized, mostly because of the fact that he was third fiddle in the Washington offense. He's somebody I would take in the first round because his impact was so tangible when he had the football in his hands. He is a great route runner. He's bendy in and out of his cuts. He's explosive. And especially with the ball in his hands, I think he's such a threat after the catch. I think that he could go somewhere in the second round and end up being a 1,000-yard receiver, second receiver in an offense on a consistent basis, if everything goes according to plan. And I think there's a lot of tangible proof of that because some NFL concepts that were enacted on him, which we talk about with Roma Dunze when we evaluate him and the amount of routes that he ran, Jalen Polk has that underneath his belt. And he was able to find statistical success despite not being the go-to option. That, to me, is an indicator that he doesn't need to be the primary guy. He understands his role and then eventually could turn out to be just such a problem to keep up with because he's just, you know, such a threat after the catch. But if I had to pick one guy who I don't get the hype for that everyone keeps pushing for being a late first rounder, is Chop Robinson from Penn State. He tested really well. He's really explosive. He's really athletic. But he is not big enough or strong enough or physical enough to defend against the run. I would take him in the third round, and he would be my rotational, situational pass rusher that I would call upon. And maybe he puts on a little more weight, which I'm not optimistic would happen. And he can maybe contribute a little bit more, but that is the most that he's going to be. I would not spend a first-round pick on a guy that is going to rotate in. That has to be probably the easiest one that I can think of that is just super, super overhyped right now.
That sounds like you literally just described Alden Smith when you're talking about Chop Robinson.
Perfect. I wouldn't say a one-to-one parallel, but I think that's a really good example of a guy like that.
Yeah, right. Just in terms of the rotational piece, he played on passing downs and then was highly effective in that rotation in San Francisco, but completely understand.
Of course.
Totally with you on Chop Robinson, because look, he wowed everybody at the combine, and I get that. But for me, where's the production for a guy that tests like that to be really a non-factor in so many games at Penn State, I think is a big red flag. And I am completely with you. I think he's getting pushed way up the board. And I also think part of it is because it's not a great edge class. That's another reason why people are kind of trying to force him into that spot when I don't think personally, I don't have a first round grade on him either. It feels like he's going to be a lock to go in the first somewhere and is probably going to end up being really overdrafted.
Yeah, I have a selfish question for the most part. Again, mentioning that I'm a Raiders fan, I saw your, the Believe mock draft, and I saw the Raiders, and I'm not sure if that was your specific pick, but I saw the Raiders mock to, Michael Penix mock to the Raiders at 13, which, by the way, I love because that's my number two rated quarterback from my ratings. Is that a real thing, or is it just a lot of, let's say, maybe recency bias because he really performed well, ran that basically 4.56 at his pro day, and then the leaping and everything, just he tested off the board outside of what we know from him on the field. And I do love the pick, but I'm more of a let me get a tackle and then kind of trade back up and see if I can get him on the back end.
Yeah, I'm a bit more in the camp with Michael Penix that it's to come back around a little bit later on if you're going to take him, because the injury history to me is too much to really invest an early pick in him. Because if you take him early in the second round, you're not losing out on a ton of value. It's better for them to try to address some of their more important needs. And you mentioned tackle. Like I would much rather they try to find a future starting offensive lineman for a very long time instead of throwing in a guy who I understand his medicals seem to have come back clear, and I understand that he hasn't necessarily been injury prone in his time at Washington, but the serious injuries that he suffered to his knees and his shoulders aren't great for a quarterback. So if he somehow deteriorates over a period of time and he can't stay healthy, you're not going to feel disenfranchised by the fact that you invested a first round or an early first round pick in him. So I would say better off taking him in day two and just kind of waiting to see if he's still on the board. Let somebody else take that risk and try to fix and take advantage of the fact that there's so much talent early on in the beginning of the first round, whether it's at receiver, it's at corner, or it's at offensive tackle.
Once again, guys, we have been joined today by Joe DeLeon, who's a producer for Yahoo Sports College Football and a college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Network. Joe, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute blast.
Of course, guys, this was awesome. Appreciate you having me on, and of course, excited to maybe hop on again in the near future.
Absolutely, Joe. We are going to take you up on that offer, no doubt about it. Because, maybe post-draft would be a great time to come on and talk about some of these guys and see where they end up going and see how they fit.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.